Live from Mom's driveway in Virginia again. We are in Virginia. I'm sitting at my mom's house. As you may know, if you've been listening to the podcast, my mom passed away recently, so we've got a lot to do, and one of the things that has to be done is there needs to be somebody here on the property. I will go in the house. We're going in the house, but I don't sleep in the house. I sleep in Mobile Podcast Command, because I always do, and it's kind of my happy place, and it's funny because it reminds me of some old times. It reminds me of when my mom, I used to sleep in the fort in the backyard all summer, and my mom would come out and ask me what I wanted for dinner. And so the last time I was here, which was Thanksgiving, I was parked out here for a week or so, and she would take her cane and bang on the side of the of the vehicle and ask me what I want. Are you coming in here for dinner? It's so funny. But anyway, we're here at my mom's house, and you know, it's a process, and I'll talk a little bit about that in this podcast, but I've been thinking a lot about the future, and I don't mean the future of Mobile Podcast Command or the other stuff. I mean the future for the country after we get past this COVID thing, if we ever do. We're going to talk about that in podcast 979, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, standing out here by the house makes me think about home insurance options for various things, roof, and so forth. And this is a good time to check with Kim Nybo at State Farm about your home insurance and make sure all your parameters are set properly depending on what kinds of problems may develop. Roofing, especially with cold weather in Minnesota right now, and especially during the winter, sometimes there's roofing issues. So I often talk about Kim Nybo at State Farm. Kim Nybo, of course, saved me hundreds of dollars on premiums for my car insurance, and I have renter's insurance with Kim. And of course, when Mobile Podcast Command was on the side of the road at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night back in the day, they really stepped up. They did above and beyond what was required. And to me, this is really the whole thing about insurance. And I'm proud to refer you to the Kimberly Nybo Agency, Kim Nybo Insurance, and endorse the entire team at Nybo and State Farm. They work as hard as I do. They're always on it, and I mean they're always on it. In Columbia Heights and Minneapolis, cars, boats, motorcycles, auto, home, and in this case I was talking about home, property, business, and life. Kim Nybo Insurance, 763-571-6111, 763-571-6111. Didn't really talk about it, but with Kim, it's all about customer service, and nobody does it better, and there is no better friend to have than Kim Nybo. You can also click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Kim Nybo at the Kim Nybo Agency, Kim Nybo Insurance. So I often talk about printing because obviously one of the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast is Cartridge World, and they ask a very simple question: why pay more to print? So if you go to the big box retailers, you spend a fortune on laser cartridges or other cartridges for printers, they can save you a ton of money on those, 30%, and you can get free delivery on qualifying orders, and some businesses can get free printers as well if you qualify. 763-420-6632, that's 763-420-6632, serving the universe from Maple Grove, Minnesota, Cartridge World. Click on the banner at the top of the page, the BobDavisPodcast.com, that says Cartridge World. Why pay more to print? I'm in the house, and so kind of walk around the house. It's odd because it's another quasi-empty house. If you'll recall the podcast I did when I sold everything or gave it away or burned it back in my house in Minneapolis, you know, you could hear me walking around the inside of an empty house, and that's going to be kind of what happens in this podcast. But before I get started, I have a number of people to thank, both for contributions to the Bob Davis Podcast through the BobDavisPodcast.com. Before I had to make this crazy 2,100-mile mega trip back to Virginia when my mom was stricken, and then since then it's been crazy. So I want to thank some people real quick. First of all, I'm not going to say the name of the networking group, but I really want to thank my networking group, my business networking group, because they did some crazy things. They gave me a lot of money, and I've given some of it back already to other people. But one of the things that's great in this sort of difficult time is if you network with with people and you do network business networking and you develop relationships and people get to know you and you get to know people, you can help people and then they can help you. And whether it's passing business or actually stepping up when people are in trouble or have a problem, it's really amazing. It is new to me. I'm not a joiner. I don't do the JCs. And it's a very almost an uncomfortable experience for me to feel that kind of closeness and gratitude to people that I work with in terms of business network marketing. And I really want to thank you guys for everything that you did. Sean Sarazen, who I've known for a long time and who's been a fan of the podcast and a fan of what I do for a long time, $100. Thank you, Sean. My friend Ben Harris at Sharp Creative, we did a podcast together a while back, and he was very kind enough to give me $100, and I appreciate that also. Bill Gleason from Gleason Printing, which is in St. Louis Park, we used to hang out together, $10. Really appreciated that. This basically goes right into the gas tank of Mobile Podcast Command. Jerry Sweeten, who is my friend Bob Sweeten's brother down in Charlotte, $50. Thank you so much. Les Hill, I don't know what to say. Les Hill, I'm not even going to tell you how much Les Hill sent to the Bob Davis podcast, but he didn't want any advertising, but he's going to get some. So we're going to talk about Les's business consulting effort. And of course, my mom also contributed to the Bob Davis podcast, $300 a while back, and that was great. Steve Steiner, my old friend, best friend, $25. Sally Rash, $50. Jill Serbay, who always deserves a mention. I wish Jill did something that I could give her a spot for, $50. This is going back. I told you I was going to do this because I had a list of these people that the list was just not available. Donald Johnson, not Don Johnson, but Donald Johnson. I think if it was Don Johnson, it would have been a lot more. $50. No, $25. Sorry, Don. Don't freak out and think that you sent more than you intended to. Sandra Amiot, $20. Greg Stamp, a while back, $25. Wayne Nelson, $25. So quite a lot of contributions prior to this tragedy that occurred in my life, which I'm not asking any sympathy for. It's life and death in the world. This is what happens. It doesn't make the grieving process any easier, but I really am uncomfortable with anybody that would interpret what I just talking about, it feels like I'm trolling for sympathy, and I'm really not. Everything is good here, and it's part of the life and death process, unfortunately. But one of the things I've noticed since I started this nomad project, really, which is a full commitment to the nomad lifestyle, and I fully intend to continue it as soon as we get affairs in order here in Virginia, is the fact that the content of the podcasts have changed drastically and positively, and so have the feeds. So it's clear to me that beginning to talk about travel and to talk about adventure, and my adventure in this nomad effort is really something that's been well received. And it's these days, I just want to say a couple things about content. I still, people still send me things like videos on some political thing, or a video that has to do with a political thing, or they'll communicate with me and want to talk about politics. And I got to tell you, from a content perspective, it just does nothing for me. And it's almost reached the point now where I don't even need to disavow it. We're at a point in politics where there's just no further point in having a conversation because everybody just wants to have their point of view confirmed. So what I want to talk about is really what's going to happen in the future. I've had a chance to kind of sit here and a couple of things, and I'm jumping around a little bit, but I got to say that one of the things that I think I did mention in a previous podcast, when you're moving, there's a rhythm to life that I discovered only after about 3 months of nomading, where the whole thing starts to slow down for you, and the whole concept of time begins to adjust. It's very interesting. The days seem longer. You seem like you're getting more done. You're focused on the things at hand because you're living completely in the moment. And I think this is one of the reasons that people do it. You're looking for a campsite for that night, or you're looking for where you're going to go. You're in transit to some other place. You're thinking about where you want to go because you can go anywhere. And for me, in terms of content, it just gives me a never-ending supply of things to talk about. And I think that's so much better than being static. And then you start reading the news and you start feeling that you want to comment on the news. And I certainly have noticed that sitting here, that Monday is this day, Tuesday is this day, you have things you have to do, you get back into the static lifestyle, you start reading the news, and you start thinking, oh, I should comment on that, and I'm not going to do it, because it ruins the spirit, because that's the world that we're living in today. The thing is, there's another world coming, and I want to talk about it in this podcast, that world, a little bit. So in the second half of this podcast, we're going to talk about the future world. So you know that eventually we're going to be looking at trade changes again, and I always recommend people who are doing manufacturing work to check out Depot Star. It doesn't matter if you're in the United States. If you're manufacturing outside of the United States, you're looking for an American manufacturer. What you want is American manufacturing, and that, of course, is Depot Star. American design, engineering, and manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com. That's D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, Depot Star. Love saying hi to my guys at 36 Lynn, which is the independently owned and operated community-focused refueling station at 36 and Lindale Avenue in the Lynn Lake neighborhood in Minneapolis. I've been going there for years, and not only are the guys at 36 and Lynn refueling out to help the community, which they do, they also feature a great selection of locally sourced products in the store, great coffee, lots of other stuff. Remember 36 and Lynn next time you swing through, because the store is the special sauce. If you need gas, remember, because they're an independent refueling station, they get a better deal on fuel, so you will always get a better deal on fuel there if you're in Minneapolis. Check them out online at 36Lynn, 36Lynn.com, or click on their banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. At the risk of triggering people, I'm going to mention a news story, but it's a hopeful news story, which is that COVID cases apparently have started to go down. In fact, it's puzzling health officials. And I will just say this. So hospitalizations and actual case numbers have been going down pretty precipitously. They're still high, but they've started to go down. They think it's because more people than they know have been infected. And so there's some level of immunity. I don't want to get into the vaccination thing because that's one of those flashpoint issues that people have feelings about. Maybe, though, just maybe, there's a light at the end of the tunnel that isn't a train. And that kind of provoked me to start thinking about what life is going to look like after this whole thing passes. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that I believe that a couple of things. First, I think this is a much more significant event in history than we're aware of. I will just simply say that my reading about pandemics suggests that there are long-term effects and changes from pandemics after the pandemic ends. And so I'm not saying it's over, but I am saying that at some point it will be over, and then we can talk about what has changed, what we have learned, and that's where I want to focus, because I think there's too much focus on what's going on right now, and you lose the longer-term focus. And one of the things I was thinking about was the Jeffersonian vision. In other words, the vision that Jefferson had when they were kind of working on the formulating ideas for this new republic back in the day. Even that may trigger some people because, of course, it's Jefferson. And, you know the whole history with Jefferson and why people are triggered by even the name Jefferson. But in any case, Jefferson was definitely a forward thinker, one of the premier thinkers of his time, and deserves credit as one of the founders of this country. His vision for the country was considerably different than a lot of the other founders' vision. Of course, they couldn't possibly have known what the Industrial Revolution would bring in this country. I don't need to go into that. But his vision was for an agrarian country that looked more like, if you'll forgive me, the antebellum South than the industrial, the post-industrial revolution North. Let's just put it that way. And his vision for the country was this largely, and I say agrarian, but what I mean is quasi-rural, more of a community. And I wonder, and this is what I was thinking about the other day, I wonder whether that may be more achievable now, considering the technology that we've learned to use during this period of time that we have considered so dark. And this is what I think about when I think about what is life going to look like in post-COVID. So if we can think more about the future and we can think about what we can do with technology, this is not set in stone. This isn't like, I'm not saying this is going to happen. Therefore, I'm saying that I think there's going to be a major shift in the way we do things. And I think that the future is going to require a major shift in the way that we do things, meaning a major shift in our consciousness to meet some of the challenges that this has really laid bare in our society. Whether it's, and many of it, much of it has been political, but it isn't all political. You know, there's a lot of social, personal things that this has sort of laid bare. I feel like something shifted during this period of time. We will see. I don't know if that's true, but it sure feels like something has shifted. Certainly, we have proven that we can function remotely, which means people have options for where they live. You no longer have to think of the city as the required center in order to do things. Remember when they used to say, oh, the value of a city is that you have this you know, social atmosphere, this community where people get together in cafes and drink espresso and talk about their movies, right? Or the tech people get together and talk about their tech ideas. And so, quote unquote, the cities seemingly have emptied. Now, the cities have not emptied. There are still people in apartments and so forth and so on in these major cities like New York City. I think about Los Angeles. But, you know, it is true that there has been a trend of people moving out of the cities recently. And the question is whether or not the cities, when this is over with, are going to start refilling again. Certainly they will to a certain degree. But I think there's a new generation of people who have figured out they've cut their teeth literally on remote work. Almost everyone I know is either has moved. There have been a bunch of articles about New Yorkers who moved to Vermont and discovered that they can live more cheaply. There's people who have gone nomad. There are people working out of RVs. And that's a small segment, but that's just one example that instead of being in New York City, they're in Vermont or New Hampshire, or instead of being in Los Angeles, they've moved to Arizona or Colorado or New Mexico or Montana or someplace like that. And so there's this whole idea of I don't have to be in New York City. So will companies require employees, consultants, managers, and so forth? Will they be required to be on scene in New York City or, you know, Somerville, Ohio, or Miami, or wherever the corporate headquarters is? A lot of people in the financial community have moved to Miami. Some of them are going to move back to New York, but not all of them. The other thing is that one of the things I've read that people have said is when this pandemic is over, there's going to be a big party. So we're all familiar with the boom of the 1920s. That happened, and of course there were two significant events at that period of time after Wilson was president. One, of course, during Wilson's presidency was World War I, but then at the end of the Wilson presidency, moving into the 1920s, I think Harding's presidency, I could be wrong, the Spanish flu was a pandemic equal, if not greater than the coronavirus pandemic worldwide. In fact, the Spanish flu killed literally millions. And one of the reasons that it killed millions was they didn't have any idea what they were dealing with. So that was one of those things where, again, they had to learn as they went. Certainly that was a much worse pandemic than this. But some people say that the the craziness, the crazy boom of the 20s might have had something to do with the feeling that people had once the pandemic was over of just this unbridled optimism. So I wonder whether we will experience a similar period. So there's a couple things going on. We're having a big party at the end of COVID, let's say. Everyone's super excited. Suddenly there's resources available. Businesses are growing again. People are going out again. There will be a great sense of optimism because suddenly all those restrictions will be gone. And I don't think people realize how deep those restrictions run and how psychologically damaging it is to have the sense that you're being controlled, even if you agree with the measures that have been put in place. And if you don't agree with the measures that have been put in place, well, then that's a whole other story. But when you combine that with these new technologies, which are only going to get better, that allow for remote work, that allow for businesses to collaborate in a different way, a more positive way than they have been able to in person, then this question of the Jeffersonian vision of this sort of dispersed republic where people are, self-sufficient, communities work together, that type of thing, then one begins to wonder what kind of spirit this will actually produce. And my feeling is this. I will say this. One of the things that I take away from what I'm seeing here is that one of the lessons I hope that has been learned is we need to foster not a divisive culture, not a judgmental culture, not a brittle culture. That's what I see. And I don't see it being, something that has to do with political orientation. I see people very brittle on really simple things. They get very, the Karens of the world, but even the non-Karens are very brittle in their response to problems. There's people very quick to freak out if there's just a little bit of a problem. And I think that this has produced a very divisive culture. I do believe that social media, as you know, if you've been listening to me, you know that I believe that social media has a big role in that. We don't have a problem-solving culture right now. We have a problem-creating culture. We have a judgmental culture that sees a problem and wants to judge and find fault and blame people and deplatform people that they think have caused the problem or break it down or break it or burn it down, that type of thing. We don't have a problem-solving culture. And so what this is going to call for is a change in consciousness. Now, I don't know whether people feeling better will change that, because I think it's defined by us all, whether we like it or not, collectively. It can't be defined by someone like me or by you individually. This is something that's just going to happen or not happen. But I think if we really want to have the future, then we're going to need to have a more collaborative culture going forward. And I'm not a big collaborator myself, but I think it's something that we need to really think about. In order to have the collaborative culture, if that's what's required, then what we have to start thinking about is knowledge-based argument. And right now we have emotion-based argument. We don't have reason at the root of our political discussions or our social discussions. We have emotion at the base of it. And I know that's a triggering statement, because I know there's a lot of people that think that they're the ones that reason and the other side is emotional. But I think I see a lot of emotion and a lot of emotional reasoning, a lot of magical thinking related to almost everything. That is not knowledge-based reason when it comes to saying, hey, this is my idea for this solution. Here's why I think it will work. The other thing I think really needs to be brought across is maybe we have a situation where there are different solutions operating at the same time, and both may be valid. And so we want to foster competing solutions in order to come up with the best solutions. We don't want to have just one solution. We want to have perhaps competing solutions to certain kinds of problems, whether they're business problems, social problems, And when I say problem, I mean, hey, this is something fun to work on. This is a problem and something has to be done. Or, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But hey, here's something we should think about. That's what I mean by a problem. Like you would work a math problem, which I don't work very well. But I'm saying you would say, hey, you know, I want to do something with my backyard. I'm not sure what I want to do. Here's where we're at. This process, I think, is going to be something we're going to be looking forward to and at the same time dreading, because it's not easy to work with people who maybe have different ideas. It's also not easy to say, okay, so maybe we'll have competing solutions. You know, maybe your idea works and maybe my idea works too. Let's let them run and see what happens. But I do believe that we have the technology. We've proven that it works. We brought people into technology that works, even though it may not work real well. It doesn't mean that it's never going to work, whether it's, for example, distance learning. You know, that's almost a joke. It's almost, it's become almost an oxymoron, because anybody I know that have kids say they're not learning, but you can call it distance learning. Well, okay, so how do we make distance learning work so that you can take your kids on the road, or so that you can move your kids to Montana and they can go to the best school in America if you can afford it, or if they want to, or if they qualify, this kind of thing. Same with business marketing. Just as a perspective, I really wasn't too thrilled. At first, I was thrilled with Zoom for business marketing. Then I went through a period where I really didn't like it. And then I went on the road, and I was like, you know, here's what I really don't like. I don't like getting up at 4 a.m. in the Pacific time zone to be on a Zoom conference that goes on at 7 a.m. Central. So it isn't that I don't like the Zoom conference. It's that I'd feel a lot better if it was 3 p.m. than it was 4 a.m. See what I'm saying? So I learned that I like the Zoom conference, but I also like the personal networking. So when you're talking about something like business networking, is there a way to have both? Can both solutions coexist? And will we have a situation where, as before, you couldn't be in a business networking group if you weren't there? Now you can still, they're going to maintain the Zoom conference, let's say, and have a face-to-face meeting at the same time. What does this mean for commerce? Is the pace of commerce faster because of new technologies than it would have been, and more efficient if we can do things? I know people have learned to use Venmo, or they've learned to use Square, or they've learned to use, you know, Pay It Forward, or they've learned to use, you know, PayPal in terms of payment processing to get things done. They've learned to add pages to their websites that allow people to do, you know, e-commerce. There are more digital nomads because it's been a matter of necessity. There are more people out doing road trips, things of that nature. And then I thought about pop-up communities. Why can't there be pop-up communities when they're needed? And why can't we say, hey, we're going to do a conference in the desert. It's going to be a pop-up community for 3 months, and we're going to just work on a project together in this one area because we need to be. Do we need to all be in an office building in Minneapolis or New York or Seattle or whatever? So there might be new stories to tell in this process. And it's a dark time now, even though there might be a little bit of good news. It's a dark time now. But I think it's time for us to start thinking about the world that we're gonna create after this is over. Now, I'm just gonna say one thing. There are a lot of people that will attach a spiritual component to this, whether it's religious or whether it is astrological or whether it is so-called spiritual, that there has been a paradigm change, that there has been an energy shift, that we've received software upgrades, and we're going to have this wonderful new thing called the Age of Aquarius, which everyone thinks is going to be this happy time. What I've read about the quote-unquote Age of Aquarius and the symbolism of Aquarius and the Age of Aquarius is that it's not necessarily all happy, fun time, love, and affection, that there's an awful lot of hard shifts and changes and difficulties to come of it. So I'm not, you know, necessarily, you know, Pollyanna about it, but I think we need to think I think it helps us to think, and I want to be one of the first people to basically say, I know there's others out there, but I want to be one of the first people to say, hey, let's not put our energy into arguing about the past, because that's what we're doing. One thing is for sure, these kinds of events, especially if they go on, so if there's a second phase of this pandemic with a new variant of the virus and it's more deadly and we continue down this dark road for the time being, it's only going to exemplify, it's only going to intensify the feeling of positivity after it passes, which it will eventually pass. And those that pick up the pieces afterwards are going to have to be, and they're going to want to be optimistic. So that will provoke a paradigm shift. If this means that certain institutions are going to go, it's time to start talking about what we're going to replace them with. And that requires knowledge-based discussion and argument, and it requires a thinking and rational people. And so I'll just throw that out and let people sort of think about it. Definitely new stories to tell after this is over, and I'm going to find them to tell. So I want to talk real quick to people who want to help animals, and I want to tell you about Inspire and Flourish. InspireandFlourish.org helps people who rescue dogs and cats and help animals in need. So there's a lot of these agencies that do this, and they need all kinds of help, and this is where Inspire and Flourish comes in. So I want to remind everybody you can do a tax-deductible contribution to Inspire and Flourish, which helps a number of these agencies that help animals across the board. Send your tax-deductible donation to Inspire and Flourish by visiting them at inspireandflourish.org or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So yeah, that was what I was thinking about. And you wouldn't believe how much work it is to just cycle through the different options to do a podcast. There's a lot of things I could have talked about, but this was the one that really excited me. So thanks for listening to podcast 979, the Bob Davis Podcast, live from the driveway at Mom's house again. Bye-bye.
I just hope that the love knows what this life is all about, because I'm in the same position as when I started out. Now I know there's folk in hospital who are far worse off than me. Oh, but that don't need me too much when my spirit don't feel free. 'Cause I'm crying, I'm crying. Hey, I'm crying. Hey, I'm crying. Well, the bouquet rocks my senses, and the blues they roll my mind. And I'm in a strange condition, and my head is hard to find. And I just keep on searching, try to seek my goal. And I just keep on studying, oh, trying to find a way.